dear ones. You're listening to the What God Is Not podcast with Father Michael O'Loughlin and Mother Natalia.
Hey, friends. This is Mother Natalia, and today we do not have Father Michael with us, which I know will make a lot of you really sad, but you can be really happy to know that we have Father Boniface Hicks, Benedictine from St. Vincent's Arch Abbey in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, and he and I are talking about sensitivity and what sensitivity is not and what it is and how it's a gift and not a burden, and the ways that we can help to heal and receive and encourage sensitive hearts. Father Boniface being a primary example of how to do all of those things. So I think you'll really enjoy this one. Father Boniface is one of my very favorite people in the world, as all of you know. And if you are a hashtag banter hater, you'll want to skip ahead about 10 minutes after this introduction, but you will miss lots of historical facts about the Benedictines. Glory to Jesus Christ.
Glory to Him forever.
Hi, Father Boniface.
Hi, Mother Natalia.
I'm so happy to be with you.
I'm so happy to be with you.
For our listeners, I am in Latrobe, Pennsylvania at St. Vincent's Arch Abbey. And Father Michael is not recording with us because it's about 5 a.m. his time. So I did not invite him. I asked.
He's merciful.
Yeah. I was talking with our friend Rose yesterday, and I told her that you and I were recording today, and she asked how Father Michael was joining in, like if we were doing that in, online or whatever. And I was like, you know, I didn't even think to invite him. So it's just Father Boniface and me. So, yeah. But you have been on once before, though.
With both of you.
Yes, with both of us. And that remains one of my favorite episodes that we've had. It's What Humility Is Not with Father Boniface Hicks was what that one is called. And which makes it sound like you're not humble.
Yeah, it's fine. It's true.
There was an episode. Oh, what was the episode? The way that it was phrased, Father Michael wanted to name it something like, oh, I think it was the one with Father Maximus, maybe. It was just named Involuntary Sin with Father Maximus. And I was like, should we put like some parentheses somewhere or something? That sounds really strange. And I don't remember what we ended up doing. But you are very humble, Father Boniface. And so that episode was a great one. And I would encourage people to listen to it. And as our listeners know also, I'm really neurotic and I don't like adjusting the sound thing when I record. And so I'm really sorry to all of our listeners if the sound is off. I'm going to try and Steve will work magic if I mess it up, but there's that. I'm like not usually nervous when I record, but suddenly we hit record and I looked at your face and now I feel really nervous.
Oh no.
Can you say anything to make me less nervous?
You know, you start out Glory to Jesus Christ. And it's always this trouble I have because I always want to say now and forever. And then I have to think, no, no, that's not right. Glory to Him for, was that, or is it the now and forever? And it's amazing how these little responses, blessed be the Lord now and forever is the Roman thing. Mm-hmm. And glory to, I don't know why I want to say now and forever.
I get really confused at your prayers here at the at the abbey. Why is it called an abbey and not a monastery?
It can be called a monastery too. A monastery is where monks live. An abbey has an abbot.
A monastery is where monastics live.
Indeed.
And you have both monks and an abbot. And then can you explain, obviously for our listeners, because obviously I know all of this. I don't know any of this. Can you explain the difference between an abbey and a priory?
A priory has a prior.
Great, but what's that mean?
So an abbot, this would be, we use these terms across different spaces, but certainly in the Benedictine space and all of our sub derivatives. And abbot is developed into a pretty significant ecclesiastical position in the early Middle Ages. In the 800s and going forward, so that an abbot actually celebrates mass like a bishop with a mitre and crozier, and abbots were the practical bishops of areas in times in the Middle Ages when abbeys were more prominent than dioceses, and so an abbot is a pretty significant ecclesiastical position that one doesn't start out with. So you don't like found a monastery and suddenly have an abbot. But that initial phase of founding, we call it a priory. And then especially if an abbey has founded a new monastery, so we have a couple of priories that have their own prior, so they have their own local governance, but they're ultimately part of our abbey, and our abbot is their abbot.
Okay.
But they have their own prior at their own priory.
Okay.
Something like that. So other religious orders use the word priory for different things, but essentially a priory is it's a less significant. So an abbey is something that's established after a number of years. Especially in the Benedictine tradition, we make a vow of stability. And I think it's one of the nice ways to characterize a Benedictine spirituality. It would be monastic in general, perhaps, but we make a vow of stability. So one of the things we do is sanctify places.
Hmm.
And that was one of the ways that the gospel spread throughout Europe. Under the direction of St. Boniface, I might add, who brought the gospel from, brought Benedictine monasticism from England to Germany in just a little after 700 AD, and then establishing monasteries was part of his evangelization effort. So, and then these monasteries sanctified places, and that became attractive for barbarians who were moving and on the go and never having the security of civilization, really. And then they encountered in monasteries civilization. So, but anyway, all of that is to say that when you establish an abbey, it's a fairly permanent structure, and many of the abbeys have been around for many centuries. Ours is the oldest in the United States, Benedictine Abbey, since 1846. But
in Europe, is that why it's called an arch abbey?
Well, the arch designation, I think those were not even given until the late 1800s. I could be wrong about that, but in the late 1800s, Leo XIII wanted to organize the abbeys into a little bit more of a structure. It's similar to what's happening now in contemplative life with that the Vatican is doing. But in organizing those structures, he established congregations as kind of collections of abbeys that would have some mutual support. Mm. And our abbey is the kind of the founder, the principal one of our congregation. So we were given the title of arch meaning first, basically.
Okay. So all of that came from when I said, I get confused in prayer at your monastery, is where that stemmed from. So I...
back to dot,
yeah.
Back to excursus closed.
Someone said this. I was talking with Drew and Mary on our road trip to Holy Resurrection recently, and Drew was like, you have this amazing gift for, we can be in a conversation and then have all of these different tracks off of it. Rabbit trails, is that what those are called? I think so.
Tangents.
And he was like, and then you just remember what we started with. And it's a cross and a crown, because my mind is going 1,000 miles a second. Anyways, so I get confused in prayer at your monastery, at your abbey, at your arch abbey, because when you say glory be, it has different endings sometimes, all in the same service. Like, I don't remember when this happened. I don't remember if it was at Matins or Vespers or midday prayer. And I had always had in my mind that the way to remember it was whether or not the bee was there. But both times in this prayer service, you have glory be, and then they end different ways. And thankfully there's a book, and yeah.
The history of translating things into English is a little bit painful. You have prayed with diocesan priests and the current Liturgy of the Hours, although I'm told that the new translation, which won't be out for another couple years, will go back to the Glory Be, World Without End, Amen, that whole construction. But when they retranslated everything in 1970, they'd made this glory to the Father and to the Son and to the Holy Spirit as it was in the beginning, is now and will be forever, Amen, which has like never been used in the English language prior to 1970. And so that's actually what introduced the confusion. Our monastery kept using the old form for any time it's spoken, Glory Be to the Father, as it was in the beginning, is now and ever shall be, world without end, Amen. Although we use that shorter form slightly when we sing it. So it's in the singing that we end up with the is now and will be forever. Amen. It sings a little bit better.
Okay. That makes sense. Thanks for the clarification. So thank you. You did a good job of helping me feel less nervous. I don't know why I suddenly get nervous around you, because you're like the easiest person to be around. So I don't know why that happens, but
because you're sensitive.
Because I'm sensitive. That's a great lead-in. So I'm going to start with two questions that I didn't warn you about. One of them you just answered. The second I've never asked you, but I think I know the answer to it. So the first question is, Father Boniface, would you say that I'm a sensitive person?
Yes.
Great. No hesitation. okay, here's the second question, which is not fair because I didn't warn you about it. Do you think that I'm too sensitive?
I don't ever apply the word too to the descriptor sensitive.
Can you say why that is?
Well, I like to think of it. So we're talking about essentially emotional sensitivity when we use the word that way. But if we think about our senses, and if somebody had excellent eyesight, like instead of being 20/20, they were whatever, 20/10 or something, would we say their eyesight is too good, too sensitive? I don't think we would.
I don't think we would, yeah.
And, you know, if they had excellent hearing, they picked up on everything. One of our most recently departed monk, Father Cyprian, may he rest in peace, had perfect pitch. And would we disparage him for having perfect pitch, that he could actually hear the tones and know what's supposed to be what and hear that it's off? Now, he was tortured in our monastery, as I think most people with perfect pitch are. But we don't – sensitivity – so then if we move to emotional sensitivity, then how can we use the word too? It's like you have too much of a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it's a great gift. So, I think there are a number of things that we can, and will, I'm sure, explore in that. But, no, I would never describe anybody actually as too sensitive. I often say to people, wonderfully sensitive. You're wonderfully sensitive because I admire it. I learn a lot. I pick up on a lot of things. I've told you I'm a learned sensitive. I've developed sensitivity skills. I learned this from Strength Finders. You ever talked about Strength Finders on here?
I don't remember. Father Michael and I have both taken it, so we should if we haven't.
So Strength Finders is an assessment that identifies 34 talent themes that every human being has to different degrees, and then arranges them from 1 to 34, 1 being the highest, 34 the lowest. Really, they're in three categories of signature, auxiliary, and non-pattern, and maybe divided up by about a third. So empathy is probably a signature strength for me, although much closer to an auxiliary. But I'm number one input. And I learned from Strength Finders that people who are high in input can learn sensitivity because I pay a lot of attention to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so I become sensitive to sensitivity. And so it's it has some of the advantages. I mean, you know, the sensitivity, sort of like perfect pitch, can be a real cross because you pick up on a lot of stuff and that can be really hard. So I don't suffer quite as much from picking up on all of the things. Although I have enough of a taste of it, I'm not like insensitive, but it just doesn't become sort of spontaneously overwhelming. But I'm sensitive to when it is overwhelming for sensitive people, because I've learned that from being around a lot of people who are generous to share their hearts and their experience with me, and so I pick up on a lot of these things. But I, just like if I were around somebody, my vision, I'm also a bit nearsighted. And so when people can see things really clearly at a distance, I like to ask them what they're seeing. And so when people can feel things at a great level of refinement, I like to ask them what they're feeling.
Mm. That's really beautiful. Thank you. I thought I knew your answer to that question. And I was really banking on it, because if you said, yes, you're too sensitive,
topic over.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to say for the rest of the time, because I'm so caught off guard and I don't know how to respond to this. So that was helpful. Thank you for answering as I anticipated you would. The reason I ask it, so I'm going to share a story about something that happened with you, and I didn't tell you I was going to share this. So if you want me to edit it out,
I love all these surprises. It's so fun. I feel totally safe in your stories and in your heart, so say anything that comes to you.
Mm-hmm. Now I just can't even focus on life, because my heart's a puddle. Several months ago, I was FaceTiming with you. I don't remember why. I was having a breakdown of some kind. It's pretty typical in life. And I'm just weeping, because my heart is broken over something. I don't even remember what at this point. And you said something about me being sensitive. And I was like, Father Boniface, I'm so sensitive. And you said, on a scale of 1 to 10, you're like a 12. which is how I knew the answer to the first question today. But and it immediately like hit this place in my heart when you said that, of so much frustration and so much shame and so much anger. And I was like, I know, Father Boniface, I'm so sensitive and I hate it and I'm continuing to weep. And you said, it makes it really difficult to FaceTime with you. And I like, my heart shatters. Don't worry, I'm going to tell people the rest of the story. My heart shatters, and I immediately, my mind goes into all of these places of, I know, because my emotions are really hard to witness, and I'm just a burden, and I'm too much, and I'm all of these things, and I know that it's difficult to talk to me, because I've known this for my whole life, and I'm going to all these places in the span of about a second and a half, before you say, it's really difficult because I just want to give you a hug. And I was like, that's not what he meant at all. But as I, that reaction, you know, I've talked on the podcast a lot about how part of the beauty of being attentive to what's happening in our heart throughout the day is that we can then sit with that later and try to understand, where was that reaction coming from? And that can be really enlightening. And often, like if we're angry at someone, if we sit with that later, it tells us a lot more about ourselves than it does about the person that we were angry with, right? And so I sat with that later and I was like, why did my mind go to all those places? And why was I so hurt by what he said? Like, why did I assume it means this particular thing and all of that? And as I sat with it, it was really enlightening, because I realized that growing up, and then even in adulthood, I've had so many encounters where people are overwhelmed by my sensitivity. They don't know how to handle it. And so then they respond with this, you're too sensitive. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've heard that statement in my life. And
I hate that.
I hate it. because it immediately, to say that you're too, first of all, I think this is just something that we often experience in our struggles in humanity is, I think as women, we often hear the lie that we're too much, and men frequently hear the lie that they're not enough, in whatever way. And men also hear that they're too much. Women also hear that they're not enough. But this was just like one of those lies of you're too much. There's something about you that's too much to handle, and it can't be put up with, and you're a burden, and all of these things. And I don't know where I was going with that. I got really distracted by the seminarians outside the, outside the window. They were jumping up and down and waving, and they're very sweet and very loving. And anyways.
We have a seminary here at St. Vincent Archabbey in addition to a college and parish. It's a big place.
Yeah.
But we're our offices in the Institute for Ministry Formation are right here outside of the seminary. So it has the delightful experience of seminarians, most of whom have just completed their finals and are feeling very free and a little bit more perky than usual. have a way of wandering these halls.
They saw us recording and they got really excited. So. Brandon was one of them.
I'm not surprised.
He's sweet. But anyways, so that's the wound in me that was touched on when you said something about my sensitivity.
Well, it's interesting. I'm just reflecting on that complementarity of too much and not enough. So a basic kind of big picture principle to keep in mind is that we're made for a communion of persons. Hmm. And Pope John Paul spoke about this so beautifully in his Theology of the Body. And of course, we are made in the image and likeness of God, who is a communion of persons. And so it's not surprising that we're made in a communion of persons. Now, we need a certain amount of sovereignty in ourselves, or otherwise we wouldn't be a communion of persons. We'd be a sort of attached blob. But the fact that I can freely give myself to someone, I need to be able to say I and freely give, but I am made for we. Mm. And so I'm not complete or fulfilled. I'm not fully even in the image and likeness of God until I'm, well, Pope John Paul says, we are in the image and likeness of God as individuals, but even more so in a communion of persons. So this is the movement of everything is towards a communion of persons. How does a communion of persons form? Through difference. So you can't have a communion so much with what you're the same as. You can't give a gift to somebody who already has it. So a person needs it to be able to receive a gift. And so in the original pattern of creation, we see that in male and female. Obviously, male does not have female, and female does not have male unless it is given from the other. And then in male and female, there's a communion of persons formed. But that pattern also elaborates across a whole lot of other things, knowing things and not knowing things, or needing something, food, and somebody else having food. And we could say, as a general quality, strength and weakness. That weakness finds its fulfillment in strength, and strength finds its fulfillment in weakness, in the complementarity and the mutual gift to each other. So if there's somebody who's very sensitive, that sensitivity is made for communion, like everything else in our life. And if you have a lot to offer in terms of your sensitivity, then someone needs a lot of capacity to receive the sensitivity. Mm. And so the rejection of the sensitivity is not so much because the sensitivity is too much, but because the capacity is too little, we could say. Mm-hmm. So I can shame the other side. Now, I've just given you a way to shame the person that's making you feel too sensitive. I'm not too sensitive. You're not enough. There you go. So you can just, I'm not promoting mutual shaming. But you can see the matching. And mm-hmm. for somebody, now, unfortunately, society has sort of rallied around sensitivity being the problem rather than receptivity being the problem. But they're equally need to expand. And that's how, you know, I think in a lot of these things fit together and find their place in communion. Mm-hmm. And I think even sensitivity, you know, it's a real cross for a couple of reasons. But one is because, the in feeling so intensely, you don't know where all of it's going to go. When you're able to bring it to a person and it's able to be held in communion, in relationship, then it feels manageable. Then it's going to be okay, even though it's still intense and it's radiant and refined. And, you know, I'm thinking in terms of like eyesight and hearing, and then applying that to emotions. I mean, when you feel it, several levels, you know, sadness isn't a single category for you. You know, it's like has shades to it, and all of that can feel so overwhelming unless it can be shared and received, and then you can actually enjoy it and see it, and that's part of what develops resiliency at a young age with attunement, and when a parent, for example, is able to receive all of the intense feeling. Actually, also at a sensory level, eyesight and hearing and taste and touch and everything, that all of that develops through being used. And that also the emotional sensitivity develops through being used and then brought into relationship. And I think, well, anyway, there's a huge crisis in terms of communion and relationships in our time. And I think that leads to a lot of other things, but we're focused on sensitivity today, so.
Yeah, I mean, you can come on the podcast whenever you want all the time and talk about all the things, because basically when Father Boniface talks about anything, I'm completely fascinated. It's because of your input and your, what's the strength for like wanting to share the input?
Well, it's actually also input.
It's so, part of input. Okay.
Yeah, input is oriented towards like collecting and then organizing and sharing the collections.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because that's a, oh man, where do I want to go with this? Because there's like three different things I want to say. I'll start with that since it was the most recent. The speaking of the complementarity and the need and the gift and the receptivity. I had a conversation with someone recently who they're just constantly thanking me for loving them. Okay. And for loving them like so big. I wish I had a better word for that. Anyways. And I finally said to them, like, look, you're welcome. But I also want you to know what a gift it is to me that you're receptive of that love, because they're giving me a great gift in their receptivity, because one of my great wounds has been my love being rejected. And for them to receive my love is healing something in me, and it's giving something to me. And that's that complementarity. Like, I need someone to receive this love and they need to receive love. And so there's this beautiful complementarity. And similarly with your input, like I just feel so selfish when I'm like, Father Boniface, just tell me everything that's in your mind. You know, we were eating dinner the other day and I was just like, are you giving a talk soon? What are you talking about? Just tell me everything. And there's a great guilt there, but there's a beauty to if part of your strength is in the sharing, and that's... Yeah, like I can give the gift of also receiving what you deeply desire to give.
That's right.
So there's that complementarity.
Yeah. And I'm very grateful for that. I do have lots of things and I love to share them, and it's a delight, not just for the sake of the sharing. I have done a lot of radio programs and recorded things, and it's hard actually to not have somebody to look at and to know. You have to work on like who's receiving this, and there's a real challenge there. So no, it's a gift for the what's being shared to be received.
Yeah, I've thought of that. I haven't told you this. It's another surprise. I've told a couple other people this. So you know that I'm going to be starting this weekly feature with Pints with Aquinas, and which is terrifying to me for a multitude of reasons. But one being the only reason I feel like I'm terrified giving talks, terrified. My heart rate's in the fat burning zone the whole time. My palms are sweaty. I feel really bad when someone has to use the mic after me, if it's a handheld mic, for that reason. And
Mother, you're going to stroke out.
Yeah.
Be careful.
I know. It's terrible. And my POTS is going to kick in. I'm just going to pass out in front of everyone. And it's more memorable than probably anything I would share in the talk. But the only reason I feel comfortable doing the podcast with Father Michael, and I didn't at first, is because I can see him the whole time. Like, we don't record video. We only record audio. But I can see him. And there's just, like, it's so much easier to have a conversation than to just speak to nobody. And so that's one of the reasons I'm worried about this Pints with Aquinas feature. And I told, and they're only like 10 to 20 minute videos. And so that'll be helpful. But they're videos, which is another reason it's terrifying. And I told someone, I think I might just tape a picture of your face like underneath the camera so that I can at least feel like I'm looking at you.
Maybe you should get a bobblehead.
With a beard that swings around as the head bobbles. It's not a bad idea. Do bobbleheads yet exist of you? Do you know?
I don't. Not that I'm aware of. Who knows?
Not that you're aware of. Yeah. Anyways, that was a huge tangent. So, yeah, it's hard to talk to someone and not to be able to see if it's being received. And I want to go back to the complementarity, the need to be received in sensitivity, because I had a conversation with someone last week before. I wanted to have this conversation before recording the podcast with you, because I'm usually really careful. I should probably have told our listeners this at some point, but like when I share stories on the podcast about someone, I've usually asked them ahead of time if I can share the story. And similarly, there was one person that in my life, I'd heard this from a lot, this "you're too sensitive." And I wanted to talk to him before releasing the podcast because I didn't want him to think that this was just
like...
I didn't want him to think this was just like an attack on him or this like painful thing that I've never talked to him about or something like that. And so I talked to him, and his response was very beautiful, because before I even shared that I had come to this conclusion, he said, "Yeah, you know, I think that's just like, that's often what we do as men, because we don't know how to handle emotions, and we don't know what to do with that. And so in our lack of knowing, we just try to shut it down," and or something like that. You know, he said something to that effect. And it was just clear that he's like, yeah, this was a problem that I couldn't receive it, and I didn't know what to do with it. And so in fear, those weren't the exact words he used, but like in fear, I would shut it down. And I had a similar conversation with one of the seminarians while I was here, who it's been really delightful to talk to the seminarians and some of the other people I've encountered here at St. Vincent's. But I had mentioned that I was going to be recording an episode with you on sensitivity. And he was like, "This can be a struggle sometimes as a seminarian, because sometimes you want to share things and it's just like in the midst of a group of men, it can just be so shut down or mocked or looked down on or whatever it is." And I particularly feel for men who are really sensitive, because it's difficult enough as a woman, but as a woman, there's at least a greater social acceptance of it. And it's more, but for men who are really sensitive, there's just like, that's a whole other ballgame that I don't even know what to do with.
I affirm sensitive men also. Wonderfully sensitive.
Uh-huh. Wonderfully sensitive.
No, you're very right. There can be a lot of lack of social acceptance, yeah. So that people can feel some shame around their sensitivity. Men can feel some shame around their sensitivity. And, you know, that's baked into a lot of our kind of machismo, hyper-masculine culture. I think a lot of that has toned down quite a bit. You would find more of that decades and decades past. And then some of that, as they say, what's not transformed is transmitted. So men, fathers who were kind of beat up by their own dads and told to toughen up, and were, you know, may have passed that on to their sons. But yeah, that, you know, boys don't cry, and get over it and toughen up and deal with it. And but I think it's helpful to see where that's coming out of in our own hearts. Again, there's a place for resiliency, but I think that's the misconception is that resiliency develops through, I don't know, dealing with a lot of things. Resiliency develops best in relationship. Mm. So it's when we know someone is in it with us, that gives us the strength to go through it. And that's more important. It's a little bit like the opposite happens. Trauma is not as much by the thing that happened as the fact that I had no one to share it with, and then I create a narrative in my own my own head. So sometimes they describe trauma as unwitnessed pain, unshared pain, and it's that's what sort of gets inside of me. So also the resiliency is the sharing, the process of sharing, and then whatever it is. So we can make it through things together much better than alone, and becoming, we're not meant to become more self-sufficient, independent, self-reliant, because again, we're made for a community of persons. And so, although we develop a certain amount of strength, and that's where I think that to broaden that idea to strength and weakness, everyone has, let's say, you know, 10 strengths and 10 weaknesses, and, or just to make it, let's say 10 strengths and 7 weaknesses or something, and finding a way to match all of my strengths with the weaknesses in someone else, and matching all my weaknesses with the strengths in someone else. And then that's how we fit together, sort of like puzzle pieces that have knobs and holes. And we plug these strengths and weaknesses together. And then we form we really form a picture. If you think of a puzzle, we form the picture of the face of Christ. And then we form a lot of resiliency. And that resiliency is when it is in relationship. So when I'm with someone in something, then I feel stronger. It helps to regulate my emotions and my nervous system and things like that. But even when I'm not with the person, when there's a strong communion of persons, that person is in some way with me. I know that my emotions are not too much for, and this isn't a rational process that I'm thinking through this, but I feel it. My heart always feels held by a particular person perhaps, but sort of the collection of persons who hold my heart. And that helps me to understand also who Christ is. Mm-hmm. He is, you know, sort of the super collection of persons. He's his own person, but he's really made himself to be experienced and encountered through so many human faces and human hearts, men and women who have received us and who have been strength for us. So all of that is to come back and say, so we develop our strengths. There's no problem with our strengths, although our strengths find their completion in the weaknesses, supporting the weaknesses of others. And there's no shame around our weaknesses. They're our kind of receptors, you might say. They're our capacity to receive and enter into communion with the strength of others. Our tendency is to ramp up our strengths. So if we had 10 strengths and 7 weaknesses, we try to turn our 10 strengths into 17 strengths to bury our 7 weaknesses. And then, you know, so we create these sorts of configurations, and then it makes it, we don't know how to receive from others, and we're exhausted because we're trying to do double duty with all of our strengths, and we end up in this very hard place. So as we enter into relationships with others, then we have the courage to maybe open up a weakness here and a weakness there, and to admit that we have some needs, and we find that there's a person who loves to give the gift. We don't have to extract it from them, but they actually love to give the gift of their strength. As you were saying earlier, that's a blessing in both directions. It's not like someone is just a leech and taking from other people, but rather it's giving the opportunity for the gift of giving, mm-hmm. and is opening to what can be received there. So that's, all of that is a broader set of principles, patterns, template for what particularly applies also in sensitivity.
Yeah. I like what you say too about just like gradually opening those weaknesses, because it's hard to do that all at once, and it's not good for us to do that all at once. Like we need the process and the growth and trust and all of these things. And it's one of the healing, one of the very healing aspects of my relationship with you has been just your patience in not pushing into those things that I'm not yet ready to share. And it's really difficult for me to share sometimes the thoughts that are going through my mind or the feelings that are going through my heart because they just seem very crazy to me. And especially like, I think I have this, I've shared this with you before, I think, but I think I have maybe an added complication of being an engineer is like, I can look at the feelings and say, that's not rational. but I still have all the feelings. And I remember when you and I talked like a month ago, I was like, I have 5 or 6 questions and I'm only brave enough to ask one of them right now. and I asked the one and you answered very beautifully as you always do. And then, you were like, well, do you want to ask the rest of them? We're kind of on a roll. And I was like, nope. and you were like, okay, that's fine. And just didn't push into it. Right. And then, yesterday, a month later, I was like, I'm ready to ask the second question. and it's like, it's, I share that because it is scary and to let people into those weaknesses and into those, places that we're just, nervous won't be received. And that's the importance of relationship and of really trying to receive the other is that the more frequently we do it well, the easier it becomes to share those things. And that's also not to, I also don't want to shame people for the times they haven't received well, because the lack of receptivity can be a place of new communion and new relationship building. I kind of think of it sometimes as like the concept of building muscle is when you like break down the muscle and tear it and then rebuild it, that's when it becomes stronger. And so I encourage people to try to receive things well, but in the moments that you don't, to then use that as an opportunity to like seek forgiveness and to admit, I didn't receive you well here and you deserved to be received better and use that to build a relationship. But.
Yeah, I think that I mentioned how resiliency develops through attunement. And attunement is being able to correspond with you. So there's some... you can think of a mother holding a baby and responding to the facial expressions, the gestures, and the mother tuning in, attuning. When that attunement mismatches, and you know that probably happens, especially with maybe a first child or something like that. But every child is unique, so the mother has to learn the child. Well, what does this mean? Mm-hmm. And when the attunement mismatches for a variety of reasons, or the mother is doing something else, or is otherwise unavailable, and then there's a rupture, as you're saying, the repair can be even stronger. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of how resiliency develops, that I learn even when I feel mismatched at this moment, I have confidence that there will be repair. Mm-hmm. And so then I don't have or if you think about, you know, a bullseye in the center being reality, the circle around that being your feelings about reality, the circle around that being your feelings about your feelings. Mm-hmm. And that's some of where we tend to spiral is I'm having some distress because my reality is there's a mismatch, there's a rupture. And now I'm having some distress about my distress. And I don't know if my distress will ever be resolved. And so now I'm distressed about my distress, about my distress. And then we tend to spiral there. If I at least can accept my distress because I have confidence, and that's a felt reality, that's not a rational reality necessarily, although it's reinforced by it, then I don't have to have the outer rim of distress. I can just have the inner distress, which is also real. That's something I'm saying to people on such a regular basis, that your emotions and a more sensitive person, even feeling it more intensely, are connecting with reality. Like let's figure out what the reality is that mm-hmm. you're connecting with. Now, sometimes we have a distorted image of reality because we don't see everything. Mm-hmm. And so that's what a baby experiences. The mother is gone. Now, the full reality is the mother's in the house. She's in the next room, you know. But the baby's experience of reality is the mother is gone. And if a baby is not distressed by the mother being gone, well, that's something that's not good about the baby. There ought to be distress there. Mm-hmm. So it's learning to accept that our emotions are telling us something about reality, mm-hmm. and learning to trust that, and again that develops and grows over time. But that resiliency through attunement, rupture and repair, and that's the process of developing a heart that can feel very intensely, but that also doesn't sort of spiral into something else because that maybe that outer circle is more in a space of, has experienced a lot more acceptance. And so there's a lot more confidence, stability, I suppose, in those feelings.
I want to talk very briefly about this thought of the spiraling out from the feelings. But first I want to cover one more thing. I want to talk about the gift of sensitivity, and I want to hear your thoughts on ways that you've seen it as a gift, because this was something I think you'll be able to articulate it a lot better than me, because I've only in the last couple of months started to see sensitivity as a gift, because for so long I thought of it as a burden and like a waste of people's energy. like we've talked about it being a gift, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on what makes it a gift and what are the ways in which the sensitive people in your life you've seen as being helpful and gifted.
Well, I think making the analogy again to physical senses, someone who can see more clearly has sharper vision, more distinction of colors, is able to point something out, look at that. And then when I see it, I can see it through their eyes in a way I would have totally overlooked it. Mm-hmm. And I experienced that with sensitive hearts too, emotional sensitivity. Someone who is picking up on the beauty of a moment, the intensity, you know, watching a movie with someone who's picking up on more shades of the reality that's being portrayed. Certainly in relationships, I have people who will tune me in to, you know, she's really having a hard time and I totally miss something because it's a little bit more subtle level than I was picking up on. And so somebody can point it out to me, or I experience somebody who's having a joy comes from the possession of the good. So it's a response to the goodness of reality. And some people who have exuberant joy, and I enjoy their enjoyment. And so that sensitivity being a more intense experience of reality helps me to tune into reality. And also, whether it's the sadness or the joy, it's the rich shades and sharper vision of reality that that I really appreciate.
That's really helpful. Thank you. And then the last thing that I wanted to talk about was, I didn't want to just walk away. I didn't want people to walk away from this and think like, well, the sensitive people then should be allowed to just like let their emotions spill out onto all of the world at all times. And they shouldn't have to have any responsibility or control of those things. Because that's not the case. And, you know, I had a conversation with my mom before recording this podcast, and she and I were kind of sharing thoughts with each other, because my mom is also extremely sensitive. And I get kind of like my way of thinking from my dad and my way of feeling from my mom, which is creates a very strange mixture inside of me. You know, my mom and I were talking about part of what we need to learn in seeing the sensitivity as a gift and receiving it as the gift that it is like, how are we to use that gift and how is it to be applied? Because I think that you're right that in the feeling things, it's pointing to a reality. But sometimes we have to sift through the emotions to figure out what the reality is. Because it's not just a matter of, oh man, I'm trying to think of a good example and I can't right now, but it's not just a matter of like, well, whatever I'm feeling, this is the objective reality. It's like the feeling is indicating something. I guess the baby whose mom has left the room is a good example. Is like the reality is not that mom has abandoned me, but the reality is something different than that. I don't know. Maybe that's not the best example. But.
Well, the baby is picking up on the fact that the mom is not in the room and is not responding.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say that the mom has abandoned the baby and will never respond.
Right. Yeah. And so we do need those of us who have like, who feel all the things and feel all the things very deeply. It's not just that we shouldn't be driven by our emotions and make all of our actions based solely on our emotions, right? There needs to be kind of an inquiry into what is this emotion? What's the reality that this emotion is conveying? And then act in the reality, not act out of whatever this, like, because it could be something that's misconstrued. And then I guess I want to share one brief story that I know I've shared on another episode before, but I don't remember when. For those who are on the outside of it, because even as someone who's very sensitive, I often encounter people's emotions and I'm like, why the heck are you feeling this? Like, I don't understand where this is coming from. It makes no sense. It's not tied to reality at all, whatever. Like, so I've experienced that as well, right? And being on that end of things, what I would encourage people to remember is that there is a reality, even if we're not seeing it, and the emotions are speaking into that in some way. And we need to learn how to receive and be present to the emotions. And sometimes that means helping the person sift through them and find the reality. They're not going to do that if they're feeling shamed, because if they're feeling shamed, they're going to try to shove down the emotion and not seek out the deeper truth and the deeper reality beneath it. Because a very tangible experience I had of this was, and it's not the best example because there's a lot of mental illness involved. But I was talking with someone one time who's got lots of different mental illnesses. And as I'm talking with him, he's sharing with me about pains about his ex-wife and about this person and that person. And he's just like, tears are just streaming from his eyes. And he's so deeply pained by the fact that his ex-wife won't let him be Catholic, right? But here's the thing. I know this man has never had an ex-wife because all of this is in his mind because of his schizophrenia or something. I don't know what the mental illness is. There's a lot there. But, and so what I could have done is tried to argue with him about the fact that he's never been married, and that's not going to do any good. Because I was like, even if the ex-wife isn't real, it's very clear by what's happening on this man's face that his pain is real. And the pain is where That's he right. needed me to be.
That's right.
And in being with him in that, in this rare moment in which I was actually like receptive to the grace to be present to the other, there was just so much healing in him from being able to, just have someone be in that pain with him. And it reminds me of the scene from Inside Out, for those of you who have seen Inside Out, where Bing Bong is crying and having some sort of breakdown and sadness, like Joy just wants to move on with life. Joy is one of the characters, Sadness is a character, and Bing Bong is a character. And Joy wants to just move on with life. And she's like, why are we sitting here? We're wasting time crying. And like, let's go. And Sadness is like, just walks over to Bing Bong and sits down with Bing Bong and puts her arm around him and is just with him, in his sadness and in his pain. And then Bing Bong's like, okay, I'm better now. You know, we can go. And Joy is just so confused. Joy's like, what just happened? What, how are we moving on now? Mm. And there's something really powerful about just being with someone and not trying to convince them that their feelings are wrong. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, very well said. Yeah, it's, again, helping to remove that kind of outer circle of our feelings about our feelings and, mm-hmm. and helping people to move to a place of acceptance. These are the feelings around the reality that we're perceiving. Mm-hmm. So there may need to be some adjustments around the reality. Although, again, that's not so much a matter of convincing as a matter of experiencing. You can tell the baby that the mother hasn't abandoned her. You know, even if the baby's old enough to understand language, you know, mm-hmm. but you can tell a person that they haven't been abandoned. But until the person comes back who they feel has abandoned them, it's hard to convince ourselves. You know, our rational minds don't work that way. Although there are some, you know, EMDR, things like that, try to connect left brain and right brain experiences to facilitate that a little bit better. But yeah, meeting somebody in the emotion that has a way of regulating, and again, the emotion is held, the perceived reality is affirmed, and then we're at a place that we can be more open to other dimensions of reality we might be missing or illusions that we might be carrying around. And so always meeting somebody in that is the first step. And just to reinforce what you were saying about, you know, this isn't just sort of permission for sensitive people to throw their emotions at everybody or something. I can't remember how you said that. You said it better than I did. But, you know, it's removing the shame around having the emotions. And then also is an invitation to pay attention to the emotions. They're pointing to something. And I was thinking, emotions are actually also a kind of anticipation of what action to take next. Mm-hmm. So it's how our body starts to prepare us. You could think of a carpenter and a carpenter's assistant. The carpenter's assistant is paying attention to the carpenter and already has the next tool that's going to be used mm-hmm. in hand. Mm-hmm. And that's what an emotion is. It's the next tool that's going to be used in hand. We're sort of anticipating, or you can think of autocomplete, you know, as you're typing out your text message and the next word is showing up mm-hmm. and it's trying to anticipate where you're going. And we've developed that through patterns of living. And for somebody who's been badly hurt by a man or something, or, well, I don't know, even, you know, you were sort of wondering about your own anxiety as we were starting the podcast. I mean, there's some experience of being measured for performance or something like that by somebody who has, anyway, I'm sure I trigger something in you that creates some nervousness around that. And so the anxiety around like trying harder, doing better, paying more attention rises up as the next tool to use. Hmm. So you notice it mm-hmm. and you may want to use it. I mean, these emotions are good. If there is a lion, it's good that fear just filled our veins with a lot of adrenaline so that we can run from it. I mean, the emotions are anticipating well in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. Some cases, there's a mismatch. You know, somebody who's developed a pattern of needing to defend themselves from a man or from a teacher or from a coach or whatever it is, and those emotions can rise up out of time, out of sequence. And so we don't shame ourselves, suppress that. We notice it. And then we may need to engage that or not. We may need to take some way to start forming a new pattern around that. And that's a whole other thing. But that's where we, you know, talk these things out and have ways to share them. So, but then just to say also whenever we're giving a gift, we're always trying to match the gift also to the receiver. So it's not that we get to throw anything at anyone. We're always trying to match the gift. So if we know that somebody has a hard time receiving certain things, within limits, we may be able to moderate that to certain degrees. But it's not because the emotion is bad or the gift is bad. Mm-hmm. It's because we're having compassion on the one who is receiving, who may be more or less overwhelmed or know how to receive what we're offering or whatever else. So we can learn in that resiliency, and we learn to moderate. But again, not because there's something bad in what we're feeling or seeing or what we have to share.
Thank you. I'm tempted to just spend the next 5 or 10 minutes gushing about how wonderful you are and how healing you are to so many people who are wounded in this area. But I've done that many times on podcasts that you haven't listened to, so our listeners know very well the great love that I have for Father Boniface and the gratitude. So I guess I'll just leave it at that, lest your humility finally be broken. But
well, it's a joy to talk with you, Mother. I can't necessarily say all of these things in a vacuum, and it's a joy to put all these things together. I haven't really thought about all of this, certainly. All of these things in sequence and at the same time. So being able to share it is a gift for me. And you're not just a blank slate either. I know that you're very in touch with your own heart, and you've walked a lot of these paths. And so your resonance and what you're sharing in return also is a great gift to me. So
thank
grateful
you.
To be with you.
All right. I'll give our little spiel if you want to be thinking of a prayer intention in that time. We are on all of the social media platforms, I think, except Twitter. Father Michael's on Twitter at Padre Michael O. And we're on Goodreads, which is, I opened it up recently to look at some of the conversations, and y'all just have really amazing things to say about the things that you're reading. So I'm grateful for those discussions that are happening, and as you guys are getting to know each other, and we're getting to know you. You can support our nonprofit, Fotina, if you'd like. The website for that is fotina.org. That's fotina.org. And that nonprofit goes towards our Matthew 25 ministry, helping the hungry, thirsty, naked, ill, imprisoned, etc., and also supporting other Catholic ministries, other Christian ministries with similar evangelization desires to this podcast, supporting our podcast and our eparchies as well. You can email us, whatgodisnotpodcast@gmail.com. Check out our website, whatgodisnot.com, I think. And, oh, I'm forgetting things. I'm the worst at this. Father Michael does such a great job, and whenever it's me, and usually people are more delighted when I do it because they like to laugh at me, I think, and that's fine. I'm just going to move on. I'm sorry to our media team for all the things I forgot. Please forgive me, as you always do. You're all so gracious. Prayer intentions. I will ask for prayers for just the sensitive hearts that I know, especially my spiritual children who are very sensitive, and my sisters in community. Pray that they may learn to see their sensitivity as a gift, because I know very, very, very few sensitive people who view their sensitivity as a gift. And I think that's a place that we really need to be working to help heal in our relationships and in our communities. So, Father Boniface, prayer intention.
Well, you listed all the things. If you would like spiritual direction formation along these lines of sensitivity, you can go to IMF. St. Vincent Seminary, spell that all out, .edu. IMF stands for the Institute for Ministry Formation, and we form spiritual directors and hopefully spiritual directors that appreciate these kinds of sensitivity, since I teach about half the classes, so they're getting a lot of this from me, like you heard during the last hour. I've been incredibly blessed by a ministry called Grief to Grace, and it's a 5-day intensive retreat. And as I mentioned trauma in our episode as unwitnessed pain, it's understanding how to connect with the reality, the feelings, trust ourselves, share that. And then really through the lens of the Paschal Mystery, it's all very Catholic. But I just mentioned that because I want to make that also the prayer intention. We have follow-ups from our Grief to Grace retreat, and I'm just aware of how hard the holidays can be for people. We're drawing close to Christmas, people visit family or not visit family. And a lot of those wounds that we carry, and you know, as we talked about, things that get triggered, and even though you know we're a foot taller than someone, we're still afraid of the person that we were afraid of when we were five, you know, and those feelings come up, and anyway, a lot of intensity around these days, and so I just am very sensitive to that, and would love to pray for people who are going home, visiting home, who will have a hard time in these days.
Thank you. For those of you who, I've already shared a lot of graces from the course that I took, the Theology of the Body course that I took with you, Father Boniface, and that's all very similar to the things that you teach through the IMF, as far as I can tell.
One of the courses.
Of the courses. If anyone wants to go back and listen to the episode I did on tenderness, to basically all of that was graces from that TOB course and graces from the heart of Father Boniface. So if you want a taste of IMF, you can listen to that episode as well. I love you and thank you. And you're wonderful. That's what I have to say. Can you please give us a blessing?
Heavenly Father, thank you for Mother Natalia, for Father Michael, for all of the listeners, for this community of faith gathered around a podcast, but united in your Holy Spirit, and that you draw constantly more deeply into the heart of Christ. Let all that has been heard in this time land in the hearts of those who have listened, that it might be a point of connection with your love and your grace. May you help us to become saints who are in communion, a communion of persons with you and with each other. May you hold all of the sensitive people and give them someone who can receive them and support them, receive the gift of their sensitivity. And may you pour out your blessing on Mother and all the listeners in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit.
Amen.